Can I ask first, how did you feel about engineering as a child and what about it excited you?
That's a really good question to start, actually, because I don't remember really knowing what engineering was as a child. So I think at school, I certainly had an image of like hard hats and concrete and the yellow Viz jackets. So I don't think I had a love for engineering as a child, because I certainly looked at the hard hats and went, nah, that's not for me. I don't want to be Bob the Builder. So I was obsessed with ballet
right.
as a child. So yeah, I don't think actually as a child I really had a love for engineering, but was very much still asking questions.
Brilliant. You've talked a lot about what engineers look like, and you work hard to blast away those stereotypes. When did you know that you wanted to become an engineer?
Not till very late in life. So I think I'm still working out if I want to become an engineer, even though I am one. So I kind of fell into it. So actually my background was in physics. But before that, I wanted to be a professional ballerina. My mum encouraged me to have a backup, and I started studying languages, science, enjoyed maths. And then I kind of took the maths, went to more applied maths towards physics, and then just found that the type of physics I liked was an application. So what can I do in the real world? And I think it was only really towards the end of an undergrad, end of a PhD, that I thought engineering is the thing for me, this kind of application in the real world of science and maths.
And what drew you to electrical engineering in particular?
Well, yeah, that's quite fun, actually, because when I was doing my PhD, my research was very much looking at nanomaterials. So really cool. I get to play with lasers and look at things that are too small that we can see. And these nanomaterials are really exciting candidates for new devices. And kind of this challenge of trying to make devices smaller, faster, smarter. And that's something that we can all relate to. Because if you think about the mobile phone, how it's changed in a lifetime, some of us probably listening will remember when the mobile phone was the size of your head and it only made a phone call. And now we have little computers in our hands. And this was something that I quite enjoyed, this challenge of we always want smaller, faster, smarter, and more importantly, energy efficient nowadays. And those types of devices all fall into electrical engineering. So that's kind of what drew me towards that.
I actually remember you doing a talk to some school children once and telling them that mobile phones used to only be used to make calls, and there was a collective gasp around the room. Such shocking revelation.
Especially when they tell them it used to be the size of your head. They just can't imagine that. And then definitely, I enjoy when there's other people in the room going, oh yeah, I've still got one of those phones as well. So it's quite funny.
And are there any engineers who inspire you in your work today?
Actually, some of the colleagues that I work with are inspiration for me today. So rather than kind of Marie Curie again, actually, the people that are tackling these problems now, these questions that I work with, are massive inspirations. And I've been really fortunate to have quite some really good mentors throughout my career. And they are inspiration for me, watching them perform their research, seeing them answer those questions, and also how they inspire people to do research and science.
Working in the UK today, there are only 12% of engineers are women. Why do you think this is?
I think there's several reasons for it. And probably the first reason is stereotypes. So from quite a young age, you have pink toys for girls, blue toys for boys. And there's already this kind of pressure from a young age about what it means to be a young girl or a young boy. And it's pressure on both sexes as well. And that kind of stereotyping goes throughout school. And there was a really good study by the Institute of Physics that showed that all girls schools are more likely to have girls studying physics or STEM-based subjects. So there seems to be this type of stereotyping as you go out through school as well that plays a role. I definitely think the idea of engineering as hard hats and concrete, which is something I personally felt as a child, also comes into play. So I'm not sure that many people realise that engineering can be so broad. I mean, playing with lasers is just one example of a type of engineering. It's not just building a building. There's several different types and it can look quite different. And I think that kind of classical idea of engineering also plays a role. But I think there's also another main reason, and that's that we have a leaky pipeline. So the number of 12%, if you look at type of professor level and senior level, the number of female engineers significantly drops off. And that's due to several reasons, such as childcare, maternity leave, overloading. But for some reason, they're being driven out, which means that you don't have those role models there. So I think we can all relate that if you're the only person in a room, that's quite frightening in some cases. It's not necessarily an inclusive feeling. And I think that also comes into play. So I think those are kind of the main two reasons.
And another big question, sorry, but what do you think we can do to overturn this?
Yeah, I wish I had a definite solution that I could say this is going to change. But I think there's several steps towards it to overturn it. I think there needs to be a lot done to get rid of these stereotypes. So encouraging anybody who's interested in pursuing engineering to do it, so that there's no reason for someone who says, yeah, I love engineering, to not take up engineering. So I think we need to get rid of some of these stereotypes across the board. So not just for women in engineering, but also it's for men in language subjects. So get rid of any stereotypes. Anyone can study what they want. I think another small thing that we can do is stop talking about women in engineering and female engineers as well, because we are just engineers as well. So we need to make that normal. I don't think I've ever heard a male engineer be called a man in engineering. So just being given the title of engineering or physicist or scientist. And then I think we really, really need to solve the leaky pipeline first, because there's a lot of focus on getting more women in at undergrad level, and that's important as well. But once we've got them into the subject, we need to keep them there. We don't need them dropping out. So I think we need to tackle that leaky pipeline. And I think some things that could help is dual career network, shared parental leave, making sure women aren't overloaded with admin roles, pastoral roles, for example, making sure that there's nothing in an institution that's stopping us being there and stopping us performing. So I think there needs to be some kind of research done about the leaky pipeline as well. And if we can have more role models, positive role models, then maybe that will help as well get more women into engineering at the start.
And feeding into that, how do you think we can inspire more young girls to choose engineering, both as a learning and a career choice?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think there's a few things. So one of the things I found worked really well was if you go into a school and you do some outreach, actually showing the different types of engineering that you can do. So taking away that hard hat stereotype, and asking them the question of having a look at the world and trying to think of something that's not designed. So thinking about how much of the world has been designed by someone. So buildings have been designed, your smartphone has been designed and made by somebody. And asking them if they want to be the person doing that. And I think showing them the breadth of engineering, because it can be anything from making an invisibility cloak to making the new high definition TV to making a renewable energy plant. It's so broad and so varied, and I think showing them that has got to inspire people and got to interest people. So I think that's one way to go.
Brilliant. You work a lot on outreach for the university, talking to girls about your own work and that of other women in STEM. Can you tell me a little bit more about this?
Yeah, because this is one of my favorite things, actually. It's one of the fun parts of the job. So I really, really enjoy just talking about my work with a new audience, so general public, school children. It's one of the most amazing things you can do because they always ask you some questions that you'd never think about. So you think you have all the answers about your own topic, and then a lovely 5-year-old girl will ask you a question that you're stumped for an answer. So I really enjoy that. And I always enjoy seeing the smiles on faces when you tell them about your work because it's something so new and usually they find it really interesting. So I would recommend anyone to do that and go share your work with the general public. But I think it's quite important to do that so people know what you're spending taxpayers' money on, but also so that young people know what they could do as a career in the future.
Would you say that engineering is something you could come to later in life?
Definitely, yes, because well, that's how I feel for me that I came to it later in life. I didn't really consider engineering way until like the end of all of my education. So I was probably what, 26 when I thought about engineering. So I think you can come to it later in life. I would say that if you're interested in solving problems and how those problems apply to a real world, then engineering is something you should definitely consider. And don't worry about it if to come later in life. You'll find a way. There are ways to get you into engineering.
What's the biggest grand challenge for engineers right now?
Oh, yeah, that is a really, really interesting question. I think if any engineer will say different things. But I think some of the main challenges for engineers right now, definitely renewable energy. This is really important for our environment. We all know that we need to tackle climate change, and renewable energy is one way for that. So that's a grand challenge, and that can be from large scale, such as let's think about wind turbines, how we make them more efficient, right down to replacing current silicon technology, and that's kind of what I'm working on. So how do we think of something completely new for devices that we've got to make them energy efficient, more energy efficient? So that's one kind of grand challenge, this energy efficiency and renewable energy. I think big data as well, the Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, that's another really big challenge for engineers. So we're all starting to use our technology more. We're relying on the cloud computing, all big data. So we need to kind of address this so that all of the new devices we're making, all of the new smart cities, smart buildings, how they integrate with big data, the Internet of Things, and artificial intelligence. And there's quite cool ideas around this of smart cities is one example of trying to have a city that's based on renewable energy, but all integrated at the same time with the internet and big data and using them to feed between each other. So that's quite an interesting grand challenge as well for engineers right now. And I would say that those two things are the two main challenges, but I think there are several other challenges that I may have missed. So if you speak to any other engineer, I'm sure they will have a different opinion, but I think those two.
Yeah. So, Jessie, when we initially arranged this interview, it was a very different world only a few weeks ago. But now COVID-19 has changed life as we know it. What opportunities do you think this crisis presents to engineers? Does it present any opportunities to engineering?
I think so, yes. So one of the main things that have come out from this is everybody is working from home, remote working. We've got more flexible working hours. And a lot of us have to juggle childcare, homeschooling, working from home. And I think that it's brought some of these issues to the surface. So some of these issues of juggling childcare is an issue that we face all the time. It's just been heightened significantly by COVID. Similarly, there are some engineers that cannot necessarily come into work every day, need to remote work for accessibility reasons. And COVID has brought that again to the forefront. So we've seen that in more detail and we've had to find ways around it. So I think one of the promising things that could come out of it is that remote working, working from home, flexible working practices are more acceptable, and that will make engineering more inclusive. So recently, a lot more conferences, for example, have become virtual. So virtual conferences. And this has been an issue for a while of people not being able to fly across the world to attend a conference and missing out. But now we've had to embrace these types of technology, this different way of working. Virtual conferences have been shown to work, and a lot of individuals who couldn't access them before now can. And that's one thing that I think engineers can really take advantage of, making use of this accessible technology so that we can be more inclusive and diverse. And if we're more inclusive and diverse, actually we're more successful as well. There's been several studies that have shown this, that if you have an inclusive, diverse community tackling these engineering problems, they're more successful. So I think that's one benefit that could come out from COVID.